And for 75 years with copyright owners, this exchange of 75 years of protection in exchange for creating something was new, something new, this promise has been broken, they say, because this work that was to pass into the public domain now won't. They relied on this promise, that promise was taken away. Congress took this work that was to pass into the public domain and gave it to particular people, those who had green things which they gave to campaigns. Where was Jack when this theft happened? Where was Valenti when these principles were broken? Well, when he speaks of duty, service, honor, integrity, pity, pride, and compassion, and sacrifice, these ideals that define our nation, where were these ideals when money broke the promise that creators depend upon to build upon our past the way Disney built upon our past and no one can build upon Disney? Where was Jack? Well, Jack was on the Hill arguing for the Copyright Term Extension Act, arguing that we break this promise with the creative culture. It was our duty, he said, to extend these copyrights, to allow the service of a company to better enable these works to be honored in the proper way. The integrity of these works would be defended, he said, only if these poor works could be protected and defended in the pride which their original authors had in them, and have compassion, he said, for the creators who built these works. They deserve this work forever. That was their sacrifice, and we owe it to them forever. Now, that wasn't their bargain. That wasn't their duty. That wasn't ours when we struck this bargain of copyright. What we struck in this bargain was an exchange for a protection for a limited time, and that exchange entailed that work would pass into the public domain, and that deal has been taken from these creators. Now, Jack believes this is moral, this taking, and whether you believe it's moral or not for the 2%, I want you to focus on the 98%. Whether you believe it's moral or not that the Gershwin estate continues to control whether Porgy and Bess can have an African-American cast or not, I want you to think of the 98%, which is locked up under copyright today with extraordinary costs to exploit or even identify the copyright owners for no productive reason at all. Just because this money bought an extension for 20 years of rights that were intended to be limited. This is, as these creators say, a kind of stealing. And that stealing has not been remedied. Now, this is nothing new, this change either. More and more, copyright law has been transformed in our tradition to become an extreme. More and more, copyright law has changed from a tiny to a huge regulation of the creative process. Originally intended to benefit authors, it no longer functions like this because in a concentrated industry of media, its function is to protect not authors but publishers. Its function in this concentrated media is to enable a kind of control over the creative process that produces a kind of homogenization of this culture, of the culture that can be spread broadly because the rules regulate the rules under which culture can be spread. Now, this concentration is new. 80% of the music distributed, it's controlled by five companies. More than 70% of the radio market controlled by four firms. 80% of television and cable by six firms. 1947, 80% of newspapers were independent. That number is less than 20% today. 1970s, 10% of major run films in the United States were foreign. That number is 0.5% today. The product of this concentration, the product of this expansion, the product of this system of regulation of the creative process means we have never in our history had a time when fewer interests have controlled more of the creative process than now, never before. And the question you must ask of this control is, does it make sense for creators, for creativity, and the innovation that could be enabled here? Now, before the internet, I don't think this change mattered much. I don't think this expansion and control, this concentration in the industry mattered much, because what could you do except turn to commercial publishers who were in the business of producing and distributing your work? They had expenses. If they had to pay lawyers in the process of doing their work, that's good for me. I produce lawyers for a living. You shouldn't complain much about it either, because it didn't matter much to your production. After the internet, though, this change matters lots. Because before the internet, though the consumer was this creature, this couch potato that simply consumed what was fed to him or her, I don't know the gender of a couch potato, by this media, after the internet, this kind of creativity enabled by the digital consumer is radically different. Now, if you've turned your computer on in the last 3 days, you've seen this type of change. This change in digital creativity means that millions now are in the position to be creators and distributors of content. Whereas before the internet, this was simply not possible. And yet what blocks this ability to take advantage of this new form of creativity is this type of regulation. Now think of this kind of creativity. This is the Walt Disney creativity. This digital creativity that produces through this mix of media an opportunity to express and comment and change our culture in a way we've not seen before. This is my favorite, but you've seen this, no doubt.
There's only you in my life. The only thing that's bright.
My first love. Your every breath that I take. Your every step I make.
And I want to share my love with you. No one else will do.
And
are just the beginning of what we can do to recreate the way in which we comment upon and make culture. These guys are tiny. They're nothing. They have no money in the world. They live in some Scandinavian country. I can't even remember. They have no equipment, really, but they have the capacity through digital technology to make a kind of statement about our culture that just 10 years ago, none of us could have done. And through this statement and the infrastructure of the distribution of this network, something different could happen. Not just about George Bush or Tony Blair, but about the whole of the way culture defines us today. The opportunity for people freely to speak and comment and criticize and build upon our culture, this freedom of Walt Disney creativity delivered on your desktop is here. And we could do something with it, but for the law. This, you saw, was free because we call it political speech. And political speech means the politicians can't complain, though Mrs. Cheney recently requested that people take down a site that criticized her. You can't legally complain under political speech because we have a tradition that recognizes the right of people to comment and criticize, to rip, mix, and burn political speeches, because political speeches define the process of citizenship. But in the world we live in, where our world is defined as much by Disney and Coca-Cola as by George Bush, we haven't the freedom to speak that way, to criticize that way, to build in that way upon this other half of what makes us who we are. We have no freedom to take these expressions or ideas and build on them in the way Walt could in 1928. Now, what explains removing that freedom from us now? What explains the contraction just at the time when the technologies are all around us, where we could see something radically different in the opportunity for people to speak, to express themselves, to remake a political culture through not turning your life into the life of a politician, but just being smart and creative and expressing yourself? We can do it technically, but you can't do it legally. Why? We could see this creativity if we could just get the law out of the way. Now, we've tried. Eric described lots of the efforts, some that I've been involved with. They've failed. Try to get Congress to do something sensible, that's failed. And I, the last naive law professor in the country, believe that if I went before the conservative Supreme Court and I said, your values entail that the framers' vision should be enforced, that free culture was their idea, not mine, and that we deserve it today, whatever Jack Valenti says, that too has failed. That ideal was given to us 210 years ago, and it has been taken from us today for no good reason at all. We failed in these two places. So it's time to try something new, right? Failure is only go on with that for so long, right? So here, something new, actually inspired by new. This is the space of the Creative Commons. Now, let me set this up in a way that might make it sensible what this effort's about. Three kinds of people out there. There are some that believe that all of their rights need to be theirs, controlled perfectly. Some who believe that none of their rights need to be controlled, happy to give it away. And then there's a bunch of people out there that think some of their rights need to be protected, not all of them. They're happy to give some away, but they want to keep some themselves. Now, when the internet was first created, the architecture and legal background made it that we had no effective system for controlling content in this space. So that we had three kinds of people out there, all sums and nones. We didn't have a system to affect the wishes of all three kinds of people. So instead of these three, the effective reality in the beginning of this time was that the principle of none governed this content. Everything was free for the taking, and people took. Many people expressed this as an ideal, but many people got anxious about this. In 1995, a special report reported the terror that copyright industry faced. Recognizing a digital network where everything could be distributed for free and perfect copies, that architecture was not something they would allow. So they took a campaign to change it on the road, in courts and in legislatures. They wanted to build a future internet where the architecture now enabled perfect control. So instead of these three kinds of rights, we would see a future where the default was the default of all rights reserved. Now, as the colors should suggest, these are extremes, a move from one extreme to another extreme, a move from total freedom to total control. And I'm not going to criticize the extremes. You know, whatever you like. Some people love, some people want total control. I've met a couple freaks like that, that's fine. Some want no control. I mean, too many of those people, that's fine too. These people at the extremes, let's let them be. I'm happy that they live their extreme life. What I want is a space in the middle. Because most have a different attitude about their content. Most have an attitude which is, here's my content, it's mine, I created it. But there's lots of ways you can use it that I'm completely okay with. And an architecture that forces you to call my lawyer every time you want to clip a picture onto your website is insane. Great for lawyers, but insane. And so this reality, that most of us live in this space in the middle, suggests we need something here to help us get back to a balance, leaving the extremes to their extremes. Not the all rights reserved world, not the no rights reserved world, but the some rights reserved world. We need to stop solving for the extreme case and need to begin to build an architecture that can support this middle case, recognizing the middle as the space most creativity lives within. Now that's the function of Creative Commons. Creative Commons is a nonprofit corporation that's going to have 1,000 ideas about ways to put content into a space where people can build upon it. Some will be in the public domain, but most will be a space where people freely express their desire that other people build upon their content in a certain way. To build a layer of reasonable copyright law in this space controlled by the extremes. To move us from this picture to this picture, where again the extremes can live and have their architectures of control DRM however they want, while keeping a place where others know they can build upon content without the fear of lawyers knocking on their door. To build this balance and restore this reasonableness through voluntary action by us, by you, by all of us. Because here, we don't need the politicians to build this space. We don't need five justices to rectify a change that has occurred over the past 50 years. What we need here are individual people to take steps that say, through their own action, I believe in something different from the extremes that Jack Valenti sings for. Now, why would you do this, people ask? Well, there's a story out there about incentives, right? We're in the modern era where economics is at the core of everything, so we have to talk about incentives. So here, some people talk about incentives. Here's my favorite recent incentives guy, Cory Doctorow, who released this extraordinary book, which I'm going to take to Disney World tomorrow and hand out, Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom. Cory's book is brilliant. The day it went on sale in bookstores, though, Cory put it up on the net with a free Creative Commons license. You could download the whole book and do with it as you wish, according to this some rights reserved model. Now, he sold many, many books in the bookstores for a first novelist. This was an extraordinary success, but he had more than 70,000 people download his book from the net. 70,000 people who know who this person is, and a significant number of whom, Cory believes, read this book on the web and then decide to buy it, or at least the next time they see a book by Cory, decide they want to buy it as well. His story is, I will sell more books by making my content freely available. This is a reason to adopt this free architecture, because the controlled architecture of the standard publishing model is not as successful. Now, that's one reason to build a CC